Hi, this is Ed Burns, site editor for Search Business Analytics, and I'm talking today with Jack Vaughn, site editor of Search Data Management, for our weekly Talking Data podcast, this one for the week of March 31st. Now, Jack, I understand you recently attended the MIT Big Data Privacy Workshop. This was one sort of organized by the White House, and I was very interested to listen in on some of this myself, to see what some people are saying about how privacy is impacted by some of the big data practices that we're seeing today. But since you were there, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you took away from the event?
Well, sure. It's always interesting to see what is going on in MIT, where it is certainly a center for technology policy thinking. And you know, the background is that obviously the U.S. government has been in a bit of, and the Obama administration in particular, has been in a bit of a defensive position related to data privacy, largely in the wake of Edward Snowden's NSA disclosures. People are finding out that the government has more access to things about them than they might have realized. And so the president, Obama, has set up a review of policies, and it includes big data privacy that has to do with commercial uses, not just government activities. And as part of that, there's a series of workshops taking place at some big colleges, and again, in March here, March 3rd, co-hosted by the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy and MIT, we went to the Big Data Privacy Workshop. And some of the people are familiar to our readers, like Mike Stonebreaker and John Gutag, both MIT people that were there. But there was also the Secretary of Commerce, Penny Pritzker, and got a chance to meet Shafi Goldwasser, who is a professor involved with cryptography. All in all, it was an interesting event. It did, in some ways, because of its focus nationally with MIT on technology, it did skirt some of the privacy issues or maybe not give them as much play as some would have anticipated. A lot of the some things that came out is the idea of a differential privacy, where you have different privacy under different circumstances with different systems, and so the systems would maintain that. It's all a little early to see how that would work or if it would work in terms of, again, not having all your phone calls perhaps privy to use, or your emails or what have you. There's a big, of course, discussion about metadata, and I know that individual there, a couple of individuals, and we've heard it here by some of our colleagues like Nikki Leskowski at Search CIO, that really metadata and data, the distinction could be a red herring, because if you haven't enough metadata about something, you can kind of figure out what the data is about, and that's something that the NSA is saying we're gathering metadata, and your data is okay. But it, you know, there's at least two schools of thought on what is an issue that could ultimately affect like the trajectory of big data. Big data has gotten a lot of publicity. It's garnered a lot of interest. Open data as well, but it is. Was a dark year in 13 for some of the enthusiasm on this front, and largely due to really a series of disclosures based on Snowden's disclosures. And just finally, I'd say that besides differential privacy, there was a talk about increased and more sophisticated use of cryptography in distributed data systems. And I had mentioned Shafi Goldwasser before, the MIT professor who spoke on the promise of cryptography, and she said in a way that there had not been that much advances since the 70s and 80s on that front, And there were ways to use it more cleverly in the right places to protect data in widely distributed systems, which is these widely distributed internet systems is what has caused a new day as far as both big data and surveillance go. So we'll see. And if people recall 70s and 80s, cryptography was a hot potato, if not a red herring. It was, the U.S. government is defense and intelligence really doesn't want cryptographic codes to be out there that they cannot break.
Right. It definitely is an important topic right now. I mean, from the reporting I do, it seems like there is a bit of a lack of awareness in the analytics community about what all this big data stuff means to privacy. And so I'm glad to see that it's being tackled at this high level. I do agree with what you said, though. It seemed like, at least from some of the portions that I watched via the webcast, that some of the issues were maybe being skirted a little bit by some of the panelists. But yeah, and either way, I think it is good that it's something that people are starting to talk about a little bit more. Let me tell us a little bit about something else you're working on right now.
Yes, well, something similar but different that is of interest is the Global Alliance for Genomics and Health, and this is an industry alliance. I had a chance to talk with Paul Grabsheed, Vice President of Strategy in Inner Systems, and on the topic. And basically, Inner Systems has recently joined the alliance. There's 148 variously known forces that are a part of it already. And the issue is this: they are making progress in documenting genomes of individuals. It is expensive. The holy grail that Paul described to me was the human genome for less than $1,000 a genome. And of course, they're trying to as they try to ramp up the technology to make genomes data, and by the way, that can be a terabyte for one person. You know, they're trying to do studies that might have 50,000 population involved, 50,000 genomes. That's a lot of terabytes, and you can't move it around the world. They have to figure out cloud-based systems that bring data or pieces of it in for integration, for processing, in order to do studies to hopefully attack some of the key diseases that confront both the developed and underdeveloped societies. Paul said that the main problem today is that just there aren't enough people whose genes have been sequenced. He said the cost is coming down, but the big issue is that the data is spread out all over the world. And we'll try and keep an eye on the Global Alliance for Genomics and Health and see what it does. Again, we talk about privacy sometimes. And the other issue is trying to free the data. I know you've covered the health area much more than I have, and are aware that it's a bit of a dilemma, because the doctors really feel that they're doing good and that they should be able to do much with the data they have, and in some cases people may not be with it or want their data to be used 10 ways to Sunday.
Right, that was one thing that struck me about the MIT Big Data Privacy Workshop, was that there was one medical researcher talking about how we can do all those great things if only we had all the data in the world, and so privacy law should respect the needs of researchers for data. But my thought was, well, pharmaceutical companies do medical research also. Are we saying that they should have everyone's personal health data? That raises issues of, whether or not they would turn it over to their marketing departments. and all that stuff. So, I mean, certainly there's a lot of promise there, but I think that, yeah, privacy does need to be pretty central whenever we're talking about genomic data. Well, but so thank you, Jack, for taking the time to talk with us about your recent reporting adventures. And so this was the Talking Data Podcast for the week of March 31st. Until next time, thank you.